Welcome to Self Discovery Media Network, formerly known as Self Discovery Radio. Each week we bring you illuminating shows from those making a difference in the lives of others. They've taken their own journey. They're here to share their skills, their wisdom to help you on yours. You can see more about us at selfdiscoverymedia.com and please listen to our wonderful collection of shows. Our next show is...
Welcome to Transformations, interviewing people who are changing our world. I'm your host, Diane J. Shaver, and coach to entrepreneurs who focus on heart as well as the bottom line. And every 2 weeks, I interview someone who's making our world a better place. All of these people are very, very different, as you have seen, but what they have in common is commitment, dedication, courage, and strength. And my wish for you is that they inspire you to add whatever you have to make this a better, just, more equitable world and a joyful world for everyone. So today, it's my pleasure to interview someone who's doing just that. And her name is, I will not say her name properly, and she will say it for you, but Abir Sikali. And that's not right. Sikali, I think it is. And she will correct me, and I invite her to do that. And you'll see photos of her remarkable work on the Transformation website, www.entrepreneurmindworld.com/transformations-podcast. She's a young Jordanian architect who's been featured on several global and local media platforms because of her innovation. And that's what you're going to see on the website, Weaving a Home. It will knock you out. They're gorgeous. And she was shortlisted for the 2012 Lexus Design Award. She's an architect, artist, designer, and cultural producer, and received her Bachelor's of Architecture and Fine Arts from Rhode Island School of Design in 2002. And I already had a soft spot for her because I'm from Rhode Island, and RISD is something very important there. So over the span of 10 years, she's built a foundation of interdisciplinary skills that span architecture, design, art, fashion, textile design, and curation. She joined Villa Moda, a lifestyle and luxury concept in Kuwait and the Gulf, as senior architect and project manager in 2005, and directed the first contemporary art fair in Jordan in 2010. In addition to her independent practice, she's also the production manager for Adele Abidin, and I'm sure I murdered that name as well, so I apologize to Adele, the internationally recognized Iraqi Finnish video artist. In 2012, her design, The Chandelier, was selected as the winner of the rug company's wall hanging design competition. And again, she was selected as winner for the Lexus Design Award for her work, Weaving a Home. So please help me welcome, I will try one more time to say it, Arbir.
It's Abir.
Abir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. And I'm so glad to be talking to you. I'm so glad that people get to see who you are. So one of the first things I want to say to you is that you talked about architecture as not only building, but as experiencing a metaphysical nature with time. What does that mean? And how does that play itself out?
Of course. I mean, working on developing this idea of a sustainable shelter. When I first started working on the idea, my intention was to actually respond to current needs, the needs of the displaced. But soon after, as I began developing the project, I realized that this approach of providing shelter to a community and thinking about a shelter as a product is not quite right. Architecture is a social technology and a cultural practice. And, you know, culture is a living thing. It's evolving, it's changing based on technology, based on history, based on geography, geographical changes, sociopolitical changes. And so building a home and architecture needs to be viewed within that context of the changing, time or the changing nature of culture and our involvement and our place within that culture. And so time is a very important thing. So it's not about imposing shelter on a community. It's right. about building shelter with a community. And this is a process. This is not something that just happens, you know, in a certain period of time. It's more than that. It's not about surviving, but it's about thriving. And in order to thrive, we must, you know, work. We must do things. So that's, I think, what I mean about that. Our physical realities, I think, are very much related to our inner selves, and how we grow is reflected in our physical environment, and vice versa. Our environment affects our own behavior. And so we have to be conscious of these ideas and of these concepts.
That was such a full answer. I kept thinking of questions as you were going along. There were so many things I wanted to say. And I mean, thinking about that, especially we're in different parts of the world and our cultures are different, but we're all human. And so there's not that difference. But I don't think here that we think about community when people build. I think it's, this is what we've always done, and so we'll do this and we'll make some slight modifications, but I don't think our architecture has changed very much here. What I was also thinking as I was reading through some of your things is that climate change is going to dictate how we live, and I think it will make it very, very different. So how do you see climate change as an impact on the way we live? And then the other thing, do you see people in different parts of the world taking in different ideas about architecture? Like I said about what it's like here, people just build. And I'm in Charleston, South Carolina, and they're just building and building and building, and they're all the same.
Yes.
So talk about those points, if you would.
Well, I think first of all, what I'd like to say is that weaving a home is inspired by principles that originate in nature, tradition, and technology. And I think that these three elements are linked and kind of in a state of perpetual movement. And so weaving a home is weaving the relationship between these elements. And, you know, while humanity, and I always like to look and think about my work in the context of what has happened in the past, because we have to give credit to our ancestors who have created the base for us to move forward, and we must continue building on that. So if you look at shelter, for example, you know, while humanity moved from a nomadic to sedentary civilizations, we are really right now at a crux in its evolution across all continents. There's rapid growth in population, urbanization, political strife, you know, the ongoing agricultural revolution and climate change, as you said, are directing our existence, I think, back to a more nomadic lifestyle. So what here Weaving a Home is doing is it's researching shelter in the 21st century as a fundamental human need, and how technology is influencing the way we build, interact, and dwell. And I think that within the context of climate change, you know, we're not living in a time where we're building consciously. We're not looking at the material that we're building.
Absolutely. In.
The notion of who an architect is has also changed. You know, if you ask someone who is an architect, there's a specific word in Arabic that is the word mi'mar. And mi'mar means is not only a person who designs and constructs a building. A mi'mar is someone who puts spirit in the building and maintains it while he lives in it. Mm. And so there is this notion that I think today we've kind of lost because of, the typology of houses and of the way we lived, and the structure of families has changed with technology. Mm. So we're not interacting with each other as much. We're not engaging ourselves and being outdoor. We're not close to nature. We become actually really far away from nature, which removes us from this ecosystem. Yes. That we are actually part of a larger system that is not only about humans, it's about animals, it's about plants. So when we talk about protecting and securing things for future generations, it's not human beings that we are. We need to be only talking about. We need to be talking about animals. We need to be talking about plants. And I think this is where my interest in the whole nomadic, indigenous kind of way of life interests me. Right. It's because climate change for indigenous communities, for example, is not an intellectual exercise. It's a sacred duty. They are so connected with the land, and they've evolved themselves and the way they live throughout many centuries and over thousands of years. And we need to really focus on preserving this knowledge and finding ways to transfer this knowledge in order to create a meaningful future. And I think this is where we miss a big chunk of this whole discussion of climate change.
Yep. Yep. And that, I mean, I kind of, in a way, it's an awful joke, but I say to people, when settlers came and to America, the first thing we did was wipe out or contain the indigenous population who had the answers to everything, who knew how to take care of the earth and how to plant and in such a way that the earth was renewed and all that stuff, and respect for animals. And while they did hunt, they hunted in a very conscious way, and they didn't kill out herds or things like that. And that's what we've done. When we brought slaves over here, they also had great knowledge, and we used their knowledge of planting and so forth, but we didn't pick up that they had knowledge of how to live. And that's a key thing. I think we've lost that, and I don't know if it's just an American thing. I think it's not, because I see what's going on in a lot of other countries. But I think you're absolutely right that we need to get back to what it is to be human and how to interact with the rest of the planet.
And I also ask questions. You know, how can we capture, maintain, and pass on this knowledge or traditional knowledge systems and values to future generations? And or the question, for example, one question that is central to the work that I'm doing is, what is a home? It's a very simple question. Yeah. But how did we live? How are we currently living? And how do we see ourselves dwelling and interacting in the future? And most importantly, how is technology affecting our human values?
Yeah.
I think that's a central thing, and you know, asking questions is very essential, and it's for me, I think it's part of the a necessary part of the creative process, because we are creators, we are creative. Community for me is a creative notion. It is about creativity, and so bringing those ideas and those values back into our current context is challenging but exciting. Yes. It's worrying. It's like a range of so many different things that I think today we need to think about.
It strikes me, there is a passage from Dickens, Tale of Two Cities, and the passage is, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. And that's what I think we are now. Like, I think the opportunities are enormous right now, if people will ask questions, you say, and I would call it waking up. So how would you define a home? You said we need to ask questions about what a home is. So you, please define what you would say a home is, and what what's its function?
You know, I think this is an ongoing question for me.
Okay.
And it can be answered from different perspectives, because I'm both Jordanian and Palestinian. I come from Palestinian descent. Of course, my father's side of the family were affected by the occupation of Palestine, and therefore had to move to Jordan in 1948, while my mother actually comes from a nomadic descent. And her family migrated from the rural area or from the desert area to an urban setting. So those are two, to look for prosperity, for and those are two different types of migration. So also Jordan's position is quite unique because it's been kind of always been a crossroad for different civilizations over centuries, and that's really what characterizes the heart of Jordan. It's its openness to receive many people, but I find myself conflicted at many times, and that's why I think I ask those questions of what is a home. And I think home for me is who you are. It's who you interact with. That's what a home is.
So it's not about a structure.
It's definitely our physical environment, as I said, definitely has a lot to do with it's a reflection. Architecture is a reflection of our cultural values. I said this, a home is a vessel through which we perceive ourselves in this world. So I'm not denying the physical aspect of a home. And I think this is where the question of how are we building comes into play. What are we building? How are we creating, our cities? And what materials are we using? Because everything in the past, whether it's a tent or a tent structure, a nomadic tent, or if it's like a courtyard house typology that exists in Syria that was built 100 or 200 or 300 years ago, actually reflects the social cohesion between people, their interaction. Everything had a function, but at the same time, everything was beautiful. Created things and made things to respond to a need that they had. So it was never about consumption. It was about utilizing natural resources in order to respond and to build things based on needs. So there's definitely a relationship between the physical and the metaphysical, I would say.
Yeah.
We live in a physical world. We live in a material world. And again, the world we live in is a reflection of our values, of our spirituality, of how we are and who we are. But I think at the core, it's really about awareness. It's about understanding your context. It's about interacting. It's about maintaining that connection. It's about collaborating. And I think these are very important notions that we must and need to bring back into today's world, because we have a lot of challenges ahead of us, especially with the fast moving pace of the development in artificial intelligence, technology, and so on.
Yeah. Every time you say something, it's like 1,000 things go through my mind. It's great. I think one of the things that I see is that people are so busy that they don't have time to be conscious. And I think it's the artists and the creatives who kind of hold that, because part of being an artist or a creative, whether you're a writer such as I am or other things, you have to have time to think, because everything that you do comes out of, and when I say thinking, it's like thinking with your soul. It's not just something going through the mind. So I'm wondering if the artists are going to be the artists of the world, and that's the broad sense of art, will be helping people to become more conscious. And the second thing that went through my mind is that the soul responds to beauty. And many structures that are being built are not beautiful at all. They are containers, and that's about it. So I want to put those things forth to you and see how you respond to those.
I think, artists respond to things in different ways, different forms of expression. Of course, we represent things through the ideas and through the objects that we create. But the significance that these objects hold to each and every one of us is different. And what I wanted to say was that my form of thinking is, as an artist, is through making. It's the connection between the hand and the mind. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is how I was able to build or design what I designed with Weaving a Home specifically. It's because I've always been engaged in making and building things and experimenting, mm-hmm. trial and error, researching, being out in nature. You know, all of these elements come together for me and allow me to think and to embody certain ideas and experiences that sometimes are difficult to express verbally. Mm-hmm. But I think making and the hand is one of our most important tools. You know, hand, for me, that's technology. That's one of the first tools that was available to human beings. And today we've lost connection with that because we're on our computers the whole time. Mm-hmm. And we're not building, we're not out there making things. And I think for me, that's a really important point. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not saying that we should all go out there and we should all build and make things. It doesn't work that way. The world, I think, is a bit more complex than just doing that. But I think that there needs to be recognition of the importance of engagement, mm-hmm. of reflection, of being close to nature, being with nature, because I think for me, nature is the biggest kind of teacher in many different ways, being close to Earth and realizing that we are part of this earth. So I'm still making sense of all of these things throughout and through my creative process. I think that's what I would say I would respond to that.
Okay, wonderful. One of the things you said that you're just coming to some realizations, I think, and I'm so much older than you are, but that our whole life is about coming to realizations. It's like growing, and like you, at one stage you understand this, and then it evolves, and it evolves, and it evolves, and that's part of being conscious as a human being. So it's like, I don't think we ever reach an ultimate. I think we're always in the process of becoming. And I think that's what's exciting about being human, you know? Mm-hmm. We've talked about around your woven houses. Now let's talk about them. They are so magnificent. And I will have pictures up too, because they are gorgeous. So let's talk about the houses. Let's get to it.
So you want me to talk about the project? I can just...
About the design itself. Let's talk about the design itself. And then about the project. Can we do it that way?
Sure, yes.
Okay.
Of course.
Okay.
I think, you know, it really all started with rethinking the role of fabric in architecture. Really, this is how it started. Okay. And thinking about, you know, I've always been interested in textiles. And they've kind of represented a lot of things to me through my family and through our history. And so on the one hand, the project was very much inspired by our collective past as Bedouin. Okay. So nomadic tribes that travel across the land and that set up temporary shelters that were their only homes. And of course, this takes shape through the process of weaving. And again, with the ongoing refugee crisis and the social conditions that are at present, there I realized that there's still a lack of basic necessities such as electricity, drinking water, and shelter in response to the masses of people that are forced out of their homes, sometimes out of their countries. Yeah. And these shelters have been based on really antiquated design systems that are, I think, not very functional and not inspiring at all. Yeah. And beyond the physical failures of, I think, current refugee camps, as I said, I think that there is a failure at the social level as well. And so what I really wanted to do was to tackle this question of living spaces. How can we improve well-being through the structure of fabric? Because at the end of the day, I am an architect. And the idea is that the structural fabric creates or acts as a decentralized, integrated energy system. So now, instead of thinking about fabric and structure as two separate things, what I did was integrate those into one thing. And this, for me, maximizes a lot of benefits, whether structural efficiency, whether benefits derived from harnessing renewable energy sources. So this was really the idea. It's how can I create a form or a home or a shelter that was completely integrated and that could provide the necessities of contemporary life? And I think that was kind of the idea, is the interconnectedness with structure, with space, with you know, how we interact within that space. It's a synthesis, I would say, between structure, architecture, and landscape to create spatial and material experiences that amplifies the importance of the ecology and the environment. And this would transform our understanding from an enclosure or a shelter as being something that just covers to something that we can communicate with, something that, that we can interact and thrive with. That's kind of where the idea comes in. And I think, you know, the whole idea of the dome goes back to this idea of the circle and, you know, sacred geometry. That's something I'm very interested in.
Me too. Isn't it wonderful?
It is wonderful. So there's definitely an interconnectedness that I'm trying to weave through this project that is not just about the physical structure, but it's about kind of not what we build, but how we build those through interlacing ideas and people together.
The other thing that strikes me, and this is a big theme for me, is beauty is very, very important. And while that might not have been foremost in what you were doing, the result is beautiful. And I think that people respond to beauty, and living in something that is beautiful does make a change in your consciousness.
100%. You know, Buckminster Fuller is one of the people I really look up
and,
to.
And kind of his structure kind of relates to your woven houses.
Well, his philosophy, I would say, of course, as I said, we need to look at what our ancestors have done in order to build on that.
Yes.
So there's definitely a reference to Buckminster Fuller, but he would say that when I'm designing, I don't think about beauty. But when I finish the design, if what I've designed is not beautiful, then I know that there's something wrong.
Yeah. So it's about harmony. So harmony absolutely. In the building would create the beauty.
Absolutely.
I love that. I didn't ask you, and this is my bad, but I will have it up on the website. Do you happen to have a picture of one of your woven houses with you?
Like the built one?
Mm-hmm.
Not really, because I'm working on the second prototype right now, and also I'm also working on, you know, things related to patent and so on. But we're in development process. There are two aspects to this project. There's the technical development with like hardcore engineers and manufacturers and research groups and so on. But then the other aspect is how can I build this shelter with a community? Which means that, for example, I'm looking at a project right now with a colleague of mine in order to find a way to revive the wool industry in Jordan, because we have a lot of wool from sheep. We go back and revive that and provide capacity building to women and to communities and find new ways to manufacture the tent through this available resource.
Wow.
So that's what I'm working on. And hopefully in a year, in less than a year, hopefully you'd be able to see something.
I'm so excited. The first tents that you made that are pictured out in the desert, how were they manufactured?
Right now, it's taken us about 3 years to, because what you saw in the image was just a concept.
Okay.
A concept based on some, it's not a physical structure.
Okay. I thought it was, and I mean, no. Either way, it's just gorgeous, and it has so much potential.
Thank you. And one thing I would also like to say is that I've had a lot of people reach out to me over the years, and this has been one of the most rewarding, inspiring, motivating aspects of my project, because it really opened up my mind into understanding what the global needs are. Mm-hmm. And also the alternative uses for such a shelter, mm-hmm. so that this could be targeted not only towards refugees, but other forms of displaced communities, marginalized communities. You know, we can even go to mountaineering. Two years ago, as I was developing and building the tent myself, I felt that I needed to experience what it means to survive in harsh weather conditions.
Oh my God.
And so I decided to climb Mount Everest and to combine this, make it a climb for a shelter. So to use this as a platform to raise awareness about the need for adequate shelter for the 1 billion people globally. But at the same time, utilize my expedition as a way to research and understand what it means to survive in harsh weather conditions and test what's out there. And this was a very extraordinary experience, I think.
So you've already done it?
So I've done it, and I took the learning back and put it back into the design process. But this is what I was telling you, is that my interaction with the global community has really enhanced my understanding and the possibilities of how I could advance and think about shelter.
Yeah,
it's really because of this type of interaction. And that's why I say that questions are always very important. Is to continuously ask questions, and that's a process by itself.
So what would be inside of these shelters in order to make them livable?
I mean, whatever, it depends on, you know, one of the most challenging aspects of the project is how do you cater such a thing to different contexts? Because different contexts have different needs. The way people live in Jordan, their norms, their traditions, their interactions are very different from the way people live in the US, for example.
Absolutely.
So now that is, another kind of trajectory that, or another path that is being explored, is how do you create something that becomes, provides guidelines, but then becomes context specific.
Right.
So maybe in my environment, you have a separator in between to separate, I don't know, men and women. I mean, that's not always the case, but sometimes that comes up.
Sure.
Or do you leave it as an open space? Do you have a cooking stove? You know, and it really depends on the needs. I think I'm not quite there yet.
Okay.
Because I'm working on resolving and building the actual structure. But these are things that I think will be addressed based on the context.
Wow. It'll be really, really interesting. So if they're woven out of wool, there's that lanolin that's in the wool. Would that make it, that would make it waterproof?
And of course.
Say again?
No, of course. I said lanolin, of course, plays that role of creating waterproofing. And actually, if you look at traditional yurts, they're actually made out of wool. They're made through felting. They're woven. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course.
It's endless. The possibilities are endless. But I think one should definitely focus, and then with time, you know, build these concepts and these notions. And evolve them with community, with people's feedback.
Yeah. But I think it's becoming more and more clear. I mean, it's at our gates. It's all over the world. I mean, there are refugees everywhere. And that feels like something that's going to continue. And if climate change is the way we think it is going, that will produce more refugees, if you will. So I think that what you're working on, shelter of any kind that is possible in different climates and different places, is going to be essential. So how long are we going to have to wait for you to get going here, girl? We need you.
No, it's happening. It's happening. It's getting there. Yeah. Slowly but surely, but it's definitely getting there. And, you know, as I said, that this is a process.
Sure.
I'm very hopeful about it.
Yeah. And it is a really hopeful sign for people thinking out of the box, that we need to stop thinking along the lines that we've always thought. I know you've talked about tradition, and that's important because it gives context. But at the same time, I think we need to start looking at things differently because the needs are different right now. So we need to weave those things together, no pun intended. And really start thinking soon about these things. Because, for instance, Rhode Island, did you know that they had to redesign the map of Rhode Island because the coastline has changed because of climate change? Did you know that?
I had no idea, actually.
Yeah.
And was this recent?
Yes, that was like last year.
Wow.
And I'm in Charleston, South Carolina, which again is an ocean bordering place. And they were going to do some offshore drilling. We've stopped it. But again, you know, there's impact already here that the coastline is changing. So these things are more immediate than people would like to think. And I think it's very important to think about shelter. And I was also touched that you thought about a refugee population. I mean, you're more there and seeing it more, but most of the time people don't think about refugees other than they're a nuisance. And they don't understand, I think, that these are humans that once had homes and businesses and whatever. So I think we need to change our thinking about a whole bunch of things. What is your input in that?
Of course, I think that now we need to think about well-being through, we have this opportunity to think about well-being through innovation and technology. And I think that there are many aspects that we need to think about in order to respond to all of these changes that are happening and that are unfolding. So we need to look at the sociocultural aspects and respond to traditional and cultural context. You know, we need to foster conditions favorable to social integration and sustainability. Yeah. We need to do that through promoting activity in the local economy, create things that are cost effective, that are more accessible. In terms of the environmental aspect, we need to think about architecture in a different way right now in terms of harnessing natural and available resources, mm-hmm. and in order to adapt to new environments. And I think that it's how do you integrate these new technologies into design, collaborate with a global community, and benefit from the wide pool of human experience to foster these new approaches for dwelling in the 21st century. And for me, everything, honestly, Diane, goes back to education. Everything goes back to education.
Bingo.
Yes.
Bingo.
Everything.
So let's take a detour now. I want to talk about Villa Moda. I want to talk about your work with Adele. I'm sorry for the pronunciations.
No.
Abidin.
And that's...
What about all of those things? I mean, you've got so many dimensions.
Yeah, I think, you know, there was one missing thing within that is recently I 4 years ago in 2015, I co-founded and co-directed something called Amman Design Week. So it was a learning platform that focused on promoting local designers to a global community. But most importantly, the mission was to foster a culture of design thinking and collaboration in Jordan. And so I co-founded it, I co-directed it for 2 years. And projects like these really allow me to understand the context that I'm living in. And also simultaneously engage in cultural production. Because I think that cultural development and social empowerment through innovation and design is really necessary. And through that platform, or such platforms, one can always initiate, you know, educational and community projects and use these platforms as a way to raise awareness about social and environmental responsibility. So my work with Adil, for example, also is part of, you know, because I'm an artist and I understand the struggles that we go through sometimes as artists to create things and to come up with ideas and to get support, I also like to support others as well. My work with Adil was really about, for me, the question was, what does it mean to be an artist in the digital age? And so working with an internationally recognized artist, you know, it makes me really understand what art production means, but in the context of the Middle East and the 21st century. And of course, in our part of the world, there were dominant trends in the market which, you know, referenced ethnic and national markers as a unifying identity for a homogenous Middle Eastern art. And I always questioned why certain representations of Arab culture were deemed more legitimate than others. You know, so what does it mean to be an artist with the roots from the Middle East? East, and you know, how can artists produce works at the same time speak to a global audience? So working with Adil really allowed me to delve into such questions, but also themes, memory. It allowed me to gain a different vantage point from which to address these kinds of questions. And my work at Villa Moda was a totally different experience because it was really about choreographing retail environments and dealing with retail, luxury shopping, craftsmanship, art, and so on. And also, I think, you know, Villa Moda was very interesting because we always used the concept of the traditional bazaar as a base to rethink how we can create contemporary shopping experiences. So again, it goes back to, you know, how can the typologies of our past continue to shape the interactions of contemporary society? So I think, you know, the things that I'm interested in are similar, but they've been just kind of experienced and manifested through different experiences and projects.
So what other things are you thinking about? I mean, we know the woven houses are going to be there in your consciousness and in your sight for a long time, but what other things are kind of coming to you? What's kind of percolating up there?
I'm working on, of course, my website, unfortunately, is not updated, but I'm going to be updating that soon. I've been working on other shelter-related projects that integrate some of these notions that I'm talking about, but in a different way. And simultaneously, what I'm creating is a platform called Al-Mamar. Al-Mamar in Arabic means the passage. And it will be a cultural meeting point between collaborative creativity and socially engaged practices. And so the mission will really be to weave together research, community development, and local resources with storytelling and new media to create awareness and promote the creative potential and visions of individuals, communities, and a society. So it's about cultural production, but utilizing this research to kind of pour back into my own design work. And I think that's would be quite interesting and also complementary.
Wow, I love that. So, I mean, when you think about it, creativity is creativity, and it's not in a box. It's not just one thing. It keeps expanding, and it has to do with consciousness and education, as you said, and education in a more traditional sense, but also education in the sense that we keep growing and learning as human beings, too. So,
Absolutely.
How can we weave together what you're doing, the Middle East, with the States, with other Western cultures? How can we promote that? How can we use those art things as a bridge for understanding?
I think that we are at a very lucky time where we have access to the outer world. Mm-hmm. And I think that engaging in diverse discussions that include a diverse group of people is really necessary for us today to advance in whatever it is we do. You know, it's not about me as an architect only thinking within the framework of architecture. But architecture, actually, it's realizing that the framework of architecture extends beyond architectural practices, which are just happening in the studio. I think it's really about gathering a multidisciplinary group of people to discuss these topics of climate change and of the way we're living, have different types of people come together. I think that's when we kind of start communicating, having a common language and discussing things and understanding things from a larger point of view. And I think there's an opportunity to do that today more than ever. It's that exchange of knowledge and the diversity that happens within that cultural exchange. It needs to happen more. To get beyond our comfort zone and go beyond our own houses and see what others are facing, what's happening out there. I think that's very important, this idea of going out and talking to people and traveling, and if you can travel. But also, I think the time to go back and reflect and to think and to document and just reflect on the observations. It's to be aware, really, to be present. I think is quite important. So that bridge, art is definitely a bridge.
Absolutely,
art is education. I think, and education is an art as well. I think that through art, we have the possibility to question systems of order and use these different forms of expression to understand a problem.
Absolutely.
So art has that role, I think.
I think it always has. And I love what you said about we need to connect up. In some ways, a lot of countries are becoming more insular. This is a time when we need to be speaking to one another, with one another, and discussing things. And as you said, like awakening consciousness and awakening new ideas, and then take those back into our own context and use them. But I think this is a time where we have to connect.
Yes, I mean, we are all producers of space and of culture.
Yes,
but we need to become more conscious drivers in the dynamic forces that shape our culture and built environment. You know, as I said, the cultivation of a place is not about what we design and build, but more about interlacing people and ideas within how we design and build.
Right.
And you know, we need to be those vehicles and contribute to the social and cultural progression and to create places where the precise and ordered relation of people takes place in a peaceful society.
Yes.
So I think it's consciousness, becoming conscious, becoming aware, and realizing that your place in this world and your position is actually part of a larger ensemble or system.
Yes.
There's this very nice word in that I learned when I visited South Africa, mm-hmm. and it's called Ubuntu, and Ubuntu means I am because of you.
Oh, so I love that.
Yeah, and you, one has to realize that you are because of who they are, because of who they were, because of yeah. who you're surrounded, because of others. That's who you are. It's because of who they are.
Yeah, I think that's gotten lost. There's so many things, I think, so many opportunities to see things differently now. One of them is to interact with people from different cultures. Like, I feel really privileged to be part of your world at this moment. This is just lovely to share your world. And to keep those going, I've always had a vision, and maybe this is something that we might touch on at some point. I've always wanted to have a place where people from different parts of the world would come together and just talk about the things that we're talking about right now. And I think that would change so many things. I think as we learn to listen to other people and talk with other people, that all of a sudden the boundaries disappear.
Absolutely.
And
And this is why I say we need to create a network where different platforms come together mm-hmm. and discuss these issues. And I think from what you're saying is that also collaborative creation is essential today.
Absolutely.
You know, this joining together of, you know, past and present, you know, in the case of what I'm interested in, is key to the revival of our built environment, where things from the past need to also play a vital role in building a meaningful future.
Yeah.
And where you know, a future where design, be it in architecture or in traditional craftsmanship or in anything else, takes part in everyday intellectual life and the spiritual and mental health of our nations, because it's the past that has given us our spiritual identity through its various designs, and the future must do the same. So the design that we create for our cities and towns at this moment in our tumultuous history needs to be sacred, because we have an obligation to give our present generation, you know, as Ruskin says, sound mental health, power, and pleasure, and to future generations the means by which they can turn to us for spiritual identity.
Yeah. It's interesting, so, as you've been talking, I've been thinking, you're in a part of the world where you have that kind of past. We're in a part of the world which it just doesn't have that kind of past. It's too new. So we have to borrow from where our ancestors came to this country from different places. For me, from Russia and Ireland. So I think that's part of what we have to do as Americans here, is kind of pull in our past from our ancestors. And you're in a place where you're surrounded by it, which is kind of wonderful.
But it's interesting you say that, because I think people here, not everyone realizes that.
Really?
Because, no, not at all. On the contrary, I think that this is one of the things that I'm trying to champion here in Jordan, is to say to people that you need to be more aware of your own cultural heritage and history, and borrow less from the West. I mean, I don't mean that in a negative way, but we've been colonized, you know, for centuries. And I think that sometimes we have this tendency of not to realize the importance of this area that we're living in, and of the importance of the past, and that we should be proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
So here, you know, even within the context of the shelter, it gives you pride. You know, when you wake up in the morning, when you make your own bed, when you clean your home, when you work, when you do something, you know, you feel proud of yourself that you've actually made something by yourself. And I think that connecting people with their own cultural, because we've been robbed from that in so many different ways. Mm. And, you know, people have become blinded, really blind. I think, and this is one of the things that I try to raise awareness about through the work that I'm doing, is that you need to be proud that you're an Arab and that you come from this part of the world. And that you're not, you weren't born into this bubble, you know, into this void.
Yeah.
You come from a lineage or a thread of ancestry that has actually innovated and has done so many things to advance civilization and society.
Yeah.
But we've lost that in our part of the world. And unfortunately, in the Levant specifically, we've been robbed, and not to blame the West, because there is definitely blame from us as well. So it's
part of it is how we view different cultures, and I'm not talking about countries now, but people who are nomadic were less than people who lived in big houses. I mean, that goes back for centuries, the way we've looked at people. I mean, it's kind of, and yet all of those, we talked about this earlier, all of the indigenous people, and I'm going to put the early Arabs in the desert as part of that, if I may. Those people were the ones that knew how to live in the world, in the physical world, and how to create a city out of nothing, and mm-hmm. how to sustain themselves. So they had, like what I was saying about our Native Americans here, like they had the answers, but we've always looked down on cultures that didn't have factories or big houses. And it's kind of backwards. It's like,
that's because of the patriarchy.
Yeah, hallelujah.
I mean, this is, I think, the big question right now. It's women. It's how to support women. Yes. And support women empowerment projects. Yep. Because women really, at least if you look at the Bedouin culture, it's the women who weave the home. It's the women who erect the homes or the tents that ultimately protect the family from environmental conditions.
Yeah.
And it's and you need to look at the global south. You need to look at, you know, with climate change, water is receding, as you said. But women in poor, stricken countries have to travel more time to collect water to bring back to their families. So yeah. That's kind of one aspect. Yeah. And another aspect is women don't have voices in positions of power to make decisions and choices and judgments, critical judgments.
Yeah.
And I really do believe that women play an essential role in advancing society and not vice versa.
Yep, I think you're right.
So I think that women, we need to support and empower women as much as possible.
And I think it's beginning. I mean, it's certainly beginning here in our Congress. I mean, we've never had that many women. It still isn't enough. But all over the world, there are women presidents and prime ministers and so forth. So it is happening. But I think that consciousness is kind of, when you think about it, women are the ones that create the family. I think about lions when we talk about this, because it's the female that goes out and hunts, and the male kind of grooms himself and stands around and makes a lot of noise, but it's the female that raises the young and has the young, and it's kind of a similar situation, let me put it that way.
Yeah, and actually, if you look at the meaning of indigenous, the word indigenous,
yeah.
It's be born through our mother, from whence all life springs.
I did right? not know that, and it's perfect. It's perfect.
I think that love your mother, you know, Mother Earth, yes. That kind of.
Yeah, and it's so interesting. I mean, here, I belong to a church called Unity, which is very metaphysical and very spiritual, but not religious in that sense. And one of the things we're working on now is reconnecting to the earth by not providing more waste, because that's obviously a big issue. So, I mean, it's beginning in small ways, but can you feel that it's beginning? Can you sense that it's beginning? I do.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a global movement in different fields, in different sectors. People are really beginning to think about what they eat, what they consume, whether it's with agriculture, with food, with design, with kind of a way of living, going off the grid or not. People are starting to realize that the system, this capitalist system that we're living in, is no longer serving us. We spend all of our lives working to survive. Yep. Why? You know, there are, so people, I feel that there's definitely this global movement, yeah. Whether it's about gender, whether it's about equality with gender or climate change, expansion and consciousness. People are beginning to engage in spiritual activities.
Yes.
I feel like it's coming back, you know, full circle.
Yes, I do too. This has been absolutely amazing. I want to stay in touch and see, maybe we can cook up something. You never know.
But why not?
Absolutely. This has been absolutely wonderful. We're at the end of our hour, unfortunately. And I want to thank you again. This has been magnificent. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thank you. And I want to thank all of our listeners for being with us today and for hearing this wonderful woman whose name I'm going to murder again. Abir Sakali. And you will see her photos of her woven homes that are so beautiful on the website www.entrepreneurmindworld/transformations-podcast. So I want to thank you for being with us. I hope that you were inspired today to add whatever it is that you came here on this planet to add, to make this a better world for everyone. And if you're a woman, step up, girl. This is our time. We need to be doing this. So, yeah. So anyway, we will see you in 2 weeks, and I will be interviewing somebody else who is making a change in the world for the better, to make this a more equitable, just, and joyful world for everybody. So this is Diane J. Shaver, your host, saying goodbye, and I am coach to entrepreneurs with heart and consciousness. So if you're one of those, I'm happy to work with you and see what we can cook up for you. So I will see you in 2 weeks, and take care.
Thank you so much, Diane. Thank you.
We hope that you enjoyed the show. To hear more of these wonderful shows on selfdiscoverymedia.com, just look up our podcast genre list. You will see many shows archives there ready for listening. Don't forget to share these wonderful shows. And if you wish to be a guest or a host, or you have an organization that needs to be highlighted, contact us at info@selfdiscoverymedia.com. Bye for now.